Hi everyone, I'm Tim, I'm an addict and I'm the chair of Your World Board. Welcome to today's webinar to celebrate Sponsorship Day. We would like to begin today in the traditional manner of a moment silence, and for those that wish to join me in the Serenity Prayer, we will say the plural version of the Serenity Prayer. So a moment silence, please. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, courage to change the things we can,
and the wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you. And as Steve just said, this meeting is being simultaneously translated into Farsi, Italian, Portuguese, and Spanish. A huge thank you to all our translators. Now that we have that all sorted and everyone can hear in their own language, I am going to ask Jorge from the World Board to kick us off with a reading from the sponsorship book. Thanks, Jorge.
Thanks, Tim. Hi, friends. I'm Jorge. I'm an addict. Sponsorship, chapter 5, an ongoing journey. For many of us, our first truly spiritual connection to another human being occurs when we open up and share honestly with our sponsors. The support and love we receive when we walk together on our journey through the 12 steps helps to free us from the self-centered fear that lies at the core of our disease. Sponsorship offers us a pathway to change and a bridge to develop other relationships. Addiction robs us of the ability to relate. Recovery restarts our connection to ourselves and the world. We now have the freedom to live a life of meaning. From the goodwill that forms the foundation, both of the NA symbol and of a sponsorship, we are able to grow in our relationships with self, society, service, and God. Thanks.
Thank you, Jorge. Okay, so before we hand the meeting over to today's panelists, we want to share a few updates with you. Following recent discussions among delegates from regions and zones around the world and the World Board, conference participants decided to hold an interim World Service Conference in April of 2022 that will cover essential business and consideration of the new Spiritual Principle of Day Daily Meditation book for approval. Participants decided to postpone the remainder of the conference until 2023, when it's hoped that the World Service Conference can again meet in person. The interim conference agenda report and conference approval TAC document, known as ICC, or ICC, I'll call it, is posted on the WSC webpage at www.na.org/conference and includes information about the decisions that will be made this coming April, as well as the approval draft of the new book. We won't be printing paper copies of the ICC, but do have bound copies of the Spiritual Principle of Day approval draft for purchase at $10 plus shipping and handling. We've had some difficulty with the web store listing, but you should be able to order the drafts by searching for the SPAD or item number 9146. As a reminder, the web store address is www.na.org/webstore. Along with the decisions for the WSC 2022, the ICC contains some questions about the future of the World Service Conference after 2023. Those questions are posted in a survey on the survey webpage, which is www.na.org/survey, and the conference page, which is www.na.org www.ASIC.org/conference through to the end of January 2022. Responses will be input for conference participants as they consider the issues. You may know that we have another survey posted right now on the survey page. Again, www.na.org/survey. And that's to gather input on the draft of the new best practices, for virtual NA meeting service tool. We've decided to extend the time that survey will be available. The survey is now posted in English, Polish, Spanish, Portuguese, and Farsi until the end of this year. Please take a look and give your input and encourage other members and friends to do the same. We also have a new way to contribute directly to NA World Services for members residing in the US. If you text the word VISION to the number 801801, you'll get a link that takes you right to our contributions page, www.na.org/give. We're trying this method because it may be more convenient for members in meetings on mobile devices, and it's easy to announce at meetings and events. We also have a couple of product updates. The 2022 desk calendars are in stock for $15, and that's item number 9500. And we have sponsorship medallions available in the web store for $5, and that will be item number 9603. Or in bundles with a keychain holder, that's 9603B. Or the chain and the desk calendar, and that's item number 9500B. If you search for sponsorship medallion, all three items will come up in the results. We will email our full mailing list when the 60th anniversary white book is available. It's coming soon, but we're unclear of the date at this point in time. It's going to be pretty special. So again, I'm just going to quickly ask all the translators to speak again. So can I hear from Farsi again, please?
I'm sorry, hold on. Okay. You want me again for the selected languages?
Just a quick hi, thanks.
برای دوستان دوباره برای اینکه زبان جلسه رو به زبان فارسی بتونین گوش بدین از موبایل هاتون سه نقطه رو بزنید و اینترپرتیشن رو انتخاب کنید زبان فارسی رو انتخاب کنید و کلمه دان رو بالای صفحه رو حتما بزنید.
Thank you. Italian, please.
Hello. Buonasera a tutti, Emanuele Amalade, per ascoltare le condivisioni di questa riunione. Se siete da un computer fisso potete trovare la chat con il globo e con le selezione della lingua italiana. Se siete da un cellulare, sull'icona con i tre puntini con scritto altro, cliccate, aprite, c'è il globo con scritto interpretazione e lì vi darà la lista delle lingue. Selezionate italiano e la conferma lo scritto finito per ascoltare la lingua italiana. Grazie, buona riunione a tutti.
Grazie. A Portuguese, please.
Sure. Eu sou o Carlinhos, sou um adicto. Para ouvir a tradução, por favor, vá à sua barra de ferramentas do Zoom. Embaixo, onde tem os botões, tem um botão na forma de um globo escrito interpretação. Clique, escolha português ou inglês, mas escolha uma língua. E em português você vai ouvir a tradução simultânea. No celular, vá aos três pontinhos. Vai aparecer interpretação de idiomas. Escolha a língua e clique em concluído. Precisa tocar em concluído para poder começar a funcionar. Boa reunião a todos, obrigado.
And Spanish, please.
Sí, buenos días, buenas tardes. De nuevo, si van a la barra de herramientas en la parte inferior de la pantalla, encontrarán el icono del globo. Por favor, abran ese enlace y ahí encontrarán las opciones de idioma. Por favor, seleccionen el idioma español para escuchar la traducción en su propio idioma. Gracias.
Gracias, Johnny. Thanks, everyone. So for today's meeting, we've asked 10 panelists to share their experience of sponsorship in NA with us. As with previous webinars, we will post a report summarising today's webinar and the audio recording to the virtual meetings page at www.na.org/virtual sometime after today's meeting. Presenters, we will give you a warning when you have 1 minute to wrap up. The list is our wonderful list today. The list of members who could share on today's topic of sponsorship is pretty much as big as the fellowship itself. Many of us have developed deep and intimate relationships with our sponsors that represent one of the great gifts of the NA program, the ability to truly be ourselves and to share with another NA member. We tried to select speakers today to reflect different aspects of sponsorship in NA. And without further ado, I am going to present all our panelists. First, we have a friend of mine, Sermak from Iran.
Hi, Tim.
Hey, Sermak. Sermak is a staff member at NAWS and manages the Iranian branch of the WSO that serves the largest NA community outside the US. Sponsorship in a community of this size sometimes presents some unique challenges, and we're very grateful to you, Sermak, for staying up so late and sharing your experience. So over to you, my friend.
Okay, thank you very much. Hello, everyone. I'm an addict, and my name is Sermak. I'm from Iran. I congratulate everyone for this sponsorship day. And I'm going to talk about my experience. Somehow, my experience with the sponsorship and with being a sponsee both might sound a little odd or strange to you. And I'm trying to speak as slow as I can, because I do translation myself and I know it's how easy it is for the translators to get confused. Anyway, I became clean nearly 24 years ago in Iran. And those days, the fellowship in Iran was small. We only had a group with two or three meetings. And all of us, most of the members, we had about the same clean time, maybe several months or at the most 1 year. And none of us had that much experience with working the steps. And I can say that hardly anyone then had worked the steps or had the experience of doing it, until a couple of members from USA, Iranian guys who were, you know, had become clean in USA and had several years clean, they moved to Iran. And most of us, all of us, including me, rushed to them, you know, asking them to work the steps with us, because we didn't know what to do. We didn't have that much literature either. So we didn't know. We just heard about steps. That's it. And of course, like most of the addicts, I always looked for the top dog, you know. I mean, if I wanted to choose a sponsor, it had to be someone who was a big shot, who was a top dog, because I always thought I know everything myself. At least I used to. Now, I sometimes still think I know the best, but that's sometimes. But then, you know, it was really hard for me to go and ask someone to help me. But this one of these guys who came back from US and he had several years clean and he knew the steps. So he looked fine to me and I went and asked him. But I wasn't the only member, you know. Maybe at least another 40, 45, 50 people asked him to sponsor at the same time, everyone at the same time. So he accepted, but it was so many members that, you know, he couldn't handle working the steps with them face to face or, you know, person to person. So he had to start up these groups. He had two groups every week in the morning. I mean, one of the weekdays in the morning, he had a group of like 20 people. In the afternoon, he had another 20. Then during the week, we would go and answer the questions and come back the next week. Then in the morning, a different set of people. In the afternoon, another set. So that's the way we learned to work the steps. We learned how to be sponsored. And we nearly did the same with our sponsors. This working in a group, working the steps in a group became a routine in Iran. It still is. I'm not saying that all the Iranians work their steps in their groups. No, we have members now that have that work their steps with their sponsors, maybe face to face, one to one. But mostly, I can say they still are working in the groups. And another reason that me as the second generation of the NA members in Iran, or even the third generation, we had to do the same. We had to start groups because, as you may have heard, the fellowship, you know, had a very phenomenal group growth in Iran. I mean, the growth was exceptional, and we had so many newcomers every day. So even people like me, which we were the second or third generations of the members, we had to start our groups. It was impossible for us to have enough time to work with our sponsors one to one. So we started the groups, and it carried on. Now, after 20 some years, nearly, I don't know, 27, 28 years, still this is a routine, and most of the Iranians work the steps in group. And there are people who have maybe 40 sponsors, 50 sponsors. I mean, I remember that once, long time ago, a couple of members were telling me that they have about 100 sponsors at the same time. And you can imagine how crazy that would be. You know, it's just impossible to give service to all these people, even if you just want to answer that phone calls. But that's the thing in Iran. We're still doing it. And it works. It had worked for us. It's, you know, we have about, I don't know, 400,000 or 500,000 members clean today from, I don't know, 1 year to 27, 28 years clean. So obviously it's working, right? Somehow. Might sound crazy. Anyway, but I had a more or less good relationship with my first sponsor. But after 4 or 5 years, he decided to move on to rehabilitation industry. You know, in Iran, it was a new thing. In Iran, we didn't have rehab centers. So he went into starting one, and he became successful. So he put most of his time and his energy in just being active in his rehab centers. And that caused issues for me and for some of his other sponsors. So we decided, and I decided, to change my sponsor. And for a year and a half, I didn't have a sponsor, you know. I was looking for one. I couldn't, as I said, I was always looking for the top dog. always looking for someone who was, you know, perfect, and I couldn't find it. And after a year, year and a half, I became acquainted with this member in US, which was a cold time, through email and through telephone, and then I met him in person. So nearly, I don't know, it was, I think, 15 years ago, I asked him to become my sponsor, and thank God he accepted. And but then he wasn't, I mean, he's a top dog, but that wasn't the reason I asked him to become my sponsor. Then I was looking for someone that I could trust, that I could feel at ease enough to just share whatever I have in my head with him. And most of all, I was looking for someone who had good knowledge of the program and who was really committed and faithful to NA. That was one of the important things for me, to have a sponsor who's all the way NA member, not half NA, half AA, or half NA, half rehab. You know, that didn't work in Iran, that didn't work for me. So I was looking for someone like that, and thank God I found it. And I asked him to become my sponsor, and he accepted. And since then, we had a good relation. I mean, of course, long distance sponsorship, obviously, most of you know, or maybe a lot of you know, you probably experienced the same thing, has its own issues, has its own problems. But he's been my sponsor for 15, 16 years. We're in contact with, I don't know, phone, with internet. And before pandemic, we used to meet up 2 or 3 times a year in different countries. And we would spend, I don't know, a couple of weeks together all day long. But after the pandemic, now, rather stopped. Okay, we'll have 1 minute. And the only issue, I mean, another issue I have with my long distance sponsor is that he's American, but all of my sponsors are Iranian. So when I hear something from him, or he, I don't know, passes on his experience, his wisdom to me, I have to translate it back to Farsi and, you know, pass it on to my sponsors in a different language, which sometimes can be a problem, but it helped me a lot, because sometimes there is a word, I don't know what is the best translation for it in Farsi. I go around, you know, I look up dictionary and here and there, and then it helped me to get a much deeper sense and deeper understanding of the principles he's trying to pass on to me. My time is over. Thank you very much for letting me share. And thank you, team. I'm done.
Thank you, Samak. Look forward to seeing you on one of the Iranian meetings soon. Now, next, we're going to hear from Lynn in New York. Today is Lynn's birthday, which she's celebrating with friends, so she actually couldn't be here in person, but we asked her to pre-record the share for us. So we're going to switch to that in a couple of seconds. This looks like Nick is all over it. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Lynn. I'm an addict, and I'm honored to be a part of this year's Sponsorship Day webinar. I got clean in New York. I think I spent the vast majority of my recovery in New York. I've been clean since January 1983. I did go into treatment. I did not know anything about 12 steps. I did not know anything about anonymous programs. I knew that I was terrified and I was desperate, and my spiritual awakening that led me here happened in three phases. And the first phase was when I agreed to spend some time with my sister, who 12-stepped me. She had about 6 months clean. I didn't know that she was clean. I just knew that she wasn't doing drugs anymore. And, you know, so, but she asked me to spend some time with her, and I was thrilled at the opportunity. I had just, I just turned 20, maybe 6 or 7 weeks before this. And I'd already known, I already realized on my 20th birthday, I realized that I was an addict. And I understood that an addict is not necessarily someone who's physically addicted to a chemical. An addict is somebody who can't stop using. And I fit that description. And I had sort of resigned myself to the fact that I was going to die from this. And so by the time my sister got in touch with me, I guess I didn't care anymore, because I told her the truth. She would ask me a question and I would tell her the truth. She asked me how I was doing. I told her not well. She asked me what I would do if she told me I would never have to feel this way again. And I said I would do anything. I only regretted that answer for like a few days. But when they finally found me a bed and I went into treatment, that was when my sister took me to a meeting, but I was using. So the first meeting I went to was in treatment, and we didn't call them presentations. They were just NA meetings, but for the people in the facility. And it was there that I first heard all the readings as they were being read. And it was there that I first saw the steps. And, you know, when I got in there, I was going to stop doing these drugs, but I was going to keep doing those drugs because there was nothing wrong with those drugs. And at the end of that meeting, I knew that it was going to be complete abstinence. I knew this program was going to save my life. And so the epiphany was, these people who are coming in, they have something that I don't have. They know something I don't know. I'm going to do whatever they tell me to do. Because I was afraid, I was terrified, actually, of going back out. I was terrified of using as I was of the life that comes along with using. And I knew that the fact that I said yes this one time, that I was given this little window of opportunity, I didn't know if I would have that again. So they kept ramming down my throat, you get a sponsor, you get a sponsor, you get a sponsor. You know, and my first sponsor was actually somebody who took me hostage, which is very common. You know, they're so excited that they see you in the meeting, they want to grab you. But then she had disappeared. And I think I was about maybe 90, somewhere between 3 and 4 months clean. And I was standing outside a meeting. And I remember it clearly because I got my clean date is January 28th. So I left treatment at February 28th. So this was April. So it's springtime. And it's this beautiful spring Sunday afternoon, because I know what meeting I was outside of. And these bikers pulled up, like a whole, like maybe 10 or 15 bikers pulled up. And in this whole crew of bikers, there was one girl. And she was very tiny. And she had her own bike. She was not on the back of anyone's bike. And she took off her helmet and she had this red hair, like flaming red hair. And she was not a stitch of black clothing was on her. I'm still like almost 40 years old. I'm still wearing black clothing. And she had lipstick on. And she was everything that I wasn't. She was happy. Like she had just, she was so, you could see it on her face how happy she was. And she was here for the meeting. And it turns out that she had a couple of years clean. And I asked her to be my sponsor. And she was my sponsor for 30 years, you know. You know, it was like a first date that was like perfect. And so honestly, like, I guess in the entire time they've been clean, I've had two sponsors. So I had Randy for 30 years and now Karen for the past 8.5 years. And so again, like, I didn't know anything about sponsorship. I don't even think I'd read the sponsorship pamphlet. And it's very simple, right? You know, a sponsor guides us through the steps and they share their experience, strength, and hope with us. And And I guess the experience, strength, and hope part, that's actually a big, that's a big chunk. Because I was lucky enough, I am lucky enough that I had two sponsors who really shared their lives with me. There was nothing hierarchical about the relationships. As it turns out, Randy only lived a couple of blocks away from me for many years. And she would sometimes call me up at like 10, 11 o'clock at night and say, there's a concert down at the Peppermint Lounge. Let's go. You know, and I would jump on the back of her bike and we'd go to the Ritz or the Pep Lounge or whatever. And so I got to have fun with her that I couldn't have when I was using. Because really, what kind of fun was I having when I was using? We didn't have the basic text yet. But, you know, it was that whole work the steps or die mofo kind of a thing. And we had step sheets and we had the working step four in Narcotics Anonymous. And I had the one that had the bestiality in it. Like, I wanted to know if I got to answer that question. I was, you know, okay. Like, I don't even want to know who's in this fellowship. But that was a big deal, like to do the steps. I don't think we knew that I didn't know that the basic text was on its way. Like, I didn't know it was coming. So it didn't matter. We had what we had. Like, that's why I always say, like, when people are all freaked out about literature for H&I, I'm like, they don't know that there's any literature. You're good. If you go in there with a little white book, you're good. You know, or the intro guide, which is like the best thing in the world. They don't know what we have. It's okay. Like, relax. They're just happy to see you. Because that's how I felt, you know? So the thing about it is that, I mean, I would go to Randy's house and we would, and obviously also when we did step work, we only wrote 4, 8, and 10. We didn't do any other writing. But it doesn't mean that we didn't work the steps to the best of our ability. So here's Randy, who's about 10 years older than me. She's got a couple of years more time than I do. But to me, it was, she had so much more of everything. I was willing to do anything that she asked me to do, but primarily because she wasn't making me do anything. She wasn't forcing me to do anything. I wanted what she had. And so I was going to do what she asked me to do. Because that's how she got what she had. And I will tell you that I was a tough customer, and not because I didn't want to do what Randy asked me to do, but it was that it took a long time for me to realize how sick I was. I didn't realize how sick I was, and that all of my resistance was because I was terrified of what it was going to be like to not behave this way anymore. Like, what's going to be replaced? How is it going to be replaced? And like, I didn't know anything, you know, I learned everything in recovery. I mean, literally like making popcorn. I set a pot on fire several times trying to make my first pot of popcorn because we didn't have those air poppers yet. So I learned how to do everything, but I also learned how to be a sponsee and how to be a sponsor. You know, I learned from these two women that, I don't expect my sponsees to be the ones who call all the time. I wasn't taught that way. I wasn't raised that way. I call you and you call me. Like they didn't have that thing of like that they're better than me. And there was no judgment about whether or not I was making my decisions based on spiritual principles or if I was thorough enough in my step work. There wasn't any of that. I mean, yes, have we had arguments? Yes. But there wasn't that sense of I'm doing it wrong and they're healthier than me or they're better than me. Like, I never felt that from either of them. And I try very hard. Actually, that's not fair. I'm not being fair to myself. Most of the time, it's not hard to offer the same to the women and a couple of men. I'm not going to lie. Okay. I sponsor a couple of men who have asked me to sponsor them. I believe that it's a privilege and an honor that they would allow me in their lives and that they would think that anything I have to say is useful. So I consider my sponsees some of my closest friends, and I share with them as deeply as Randy and Karen have shared with me. Because I'm not here to tell anybody what to do. I'm here to share my experience with you. And I learn a lot from the people I sponsor, because I watch them go through their lives and go through their struggles. And I'm so impressed by how they want this program to shape them into better versions of themselves. And I can identify with that, because that's what I want. And so do I have more clean time than them? Yes. So have I been doing this longer than they have? Yes. Am I less fucked up than them? No, I'm not. So we're together. You know, there isn't a difference in anything except I've been doing this longer. And that's not because of anything other than you got clean when you were supposed to get clean. You know, I resented for a long time that I got clean so young, because everybody I knew was like at least 10 years older than me. And it took about 5 years for me to realize I wouldn't have lasted that long. I got clean when I got clean, because that's how sick I was, and I didn't have any more in me. I think I've done my time, and I hope I've spoken enough on sponsorship. It has been the most important relationship in my life. I have learned more about being a friend from sponsoring and being sponsored than from anything else. And I've been able to bring that over to all of my other relationships. So, and it's so funny, because the thing I said was going to be the last thing, I've totally forgotten what it was. So this is the last thing that I'm going to say about it, which is, this is a miraculous program. These steps are extraordinary. I would not be half the person I am without it. And I am forever grateful to Narcotics Anonymous. And thank you so much for letting me participate in this.
Oh, that was wonderful. Very, very grateful for Lynn sharing with us today. And I'll send her an email just to express thanks from everyone here, which I'm sure you're all feeling gratitude for Lynn's share. I was very fortunate to get to hang out with Lynn in New York, and she took me to a meeting once. So great memory. What a wonderful human being. And on to another wonderful human being. Next, we have Ron M. from Florida to share with us. Ron is a former chair of the World Board and served for 12 years on our World Board. Sponsors a number of people, including people from African communities, where NA is relatively new. So without further ado, I'm going to hand it over to you, my friend Ron.
I'm an addict. My name is Ron. I would like to speak a touch on long distance sponsorship. But in the meantime, I found Narcotics Anonymous in May of 1984. And I found myself in August of 1988. I picked up again. And it took me 9 months to get back into fellowship. I tried right away. I thought it was going to be a weekend experience, and it wasn't. Prior to that relapse.
Could you slow down, please? Thank you.
Prior to that relapse, I could not tell you what the topic of the last meeting I had attended. I could not tell you what the meditation of the day was. I couldn't tell you much about, because I was around the fellowship rather than being engaged in the fellowship. That relapse had been the jarring effect that put me back into the fellowship and want me to work this program to the best of my ability. I no longer had that attitude of indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles that we speak about in our basic text or in our little white book. I was serious about my engagement in my recovery. I immediately asked someone to sponsor me upon my return in the spring of 1989. I felt like I was heard. I felt mentorship. I was given positive direction. I was fortunate that I had chosen someone who was engaged in their recovery, someone who was engaged in Narcotics Anonymous, someone who had a home group, someone who was involved in service to Narcotics Anonymous, someone who had an NA sponsor, who had an NA sponsor. And I didn't realize what I had, but what happened was I got clean in one part of Florida, and I moved to another part of Florida where I currently live. Once I arrived here, my father notified our family that he was terminally ill with cancer. And my sponsor directed me to get someone close by because he felt like I needed someone closer. That worked. At that point, I had had four sponsors in Narcotics Anonymous, and I was seeking another sponsor because the one I was working with, it just didn't seem like a fit. I was willing to take directions, but it wasn't coming, in my opinion. And I remember I was involved in service at that point. I was involved in our regional service, and I had lunch with a friend of mine who was engaged in the fellowship. And I was telling him I was looking for a sponsor, and I was asking him questions about someone else. And during our discussion at lunch, it became apparent to me that I was really talking to my sponsor. I knew some of the things I wanted. I wanted someone who was committed to Narcotics Anonymous. I wanted someone who had a sponsor, who had a sponsor, who had a sponsor. I wanted someone who was currently working steps with that sponsor. I wanted a male sponsor. I wanted someone who was engaged in Narcotics Anonymous rather than sort of being all over 12-step fellowships. And this guy had all of these things. For the past 27 and a half years, this has been my sponsor. What has happened with that is this person didn't live where I lived. He lived in another part of Florida. So he may as well have been living in Scotland or some other country, because that hour and a half away meant that I had to have certain ingredients. I had the spiritual principles that I really needed to acquire and maintain, which I think I have in that relationship, is that one of discipline. Because when I with a long distance sponsor, I think discipline is important. Commitment, which is evolved out of discipline, and humility. And I had to have a strong support group, because without that sponsor having, quote, eyes on me, I felt like I needed to be accountable. So I needed a support group that would not co-sign my disease of addiction. That's long distance sponsorship was working for me. My sponsor was available to me. Because we were both committed to regional service, I saw him at least once every 2 years. And that lasted for quite some time. But there came a time when my sponsor moved to North Carolina here in the United States, which is 4 to 5 states away from here. And we continued to maintain that relationship because there were ways and means for me to see my sponsor on a regular basis. But in the absence of that, it was incumbent upon me to maintain that commitment verbally, and it was necessary for me to see my sponsor on a regular basis. I had to have tangible experience with that sponsor, something that I could touch and feel. And we maintained that and found ways and means to do that. We have an annual sponsorship gathering where we come together. We're both actively involved in service to this date. Matter of fact, that's one of the requirements or one of the expectations that we have is a group conscious commitment to service at all given times. And I don't sponsor anyone who doesn't maintain that type of commitment because it makes it easier for me to sponsor someone who's engaged. Having those kinds of commitments means that fellowship with other people who are in recovery. that, again, as I mentioned, we have a long-term relationship. For me, 27 and a half years, but one sponsor has been an inspiration. I've continued to do step work. There's a line in our basic text that really inspired me to always want sponsorship. One thing I know for certain, that no matter what the IQ of my sponsor is, no matter what they think their status in the community is, no matter what my sponsor is not, I do not have the capacity to be objective about myself. There's a saying, I can't see my own ears. I need someone to help me keep a watchful eye on myself. You know, that's what vigilance means to me, to keep a watchful eye. And I believe my sponsor is loyal to my better interests. And we have an adult to adult relationship. He doesn't talk to me like he's my parent and I'm a child. It's an adult to adult communication. So with that comes responsibility. And so having that kind of idea that I can't be objective about myself, I always need those other eyes. And what better to have someone who's engaged and have another sponsor themselves? Because if my sponsor is not working with a sponsor, some way, somehow, I'm getting his disease. You know, when he talks to me, you know, he's not engaged in his recovery. And I think that's important for me. Long distance sponsorship has been somewhat, it's been a lot easier today in the world that we live. You know, I sponsor men on three continents. And with that, you know, we started out using Skype, you know, as a mechanism for us to do step work, for a mechanism for us to continue the communication. We also have WhatsApp as a way of making phone calls and staying in touch that way. I happen to have an iPhone, which it doesn't cost any expense for me to call another continent with that. We found ways and means to do that. My sponsor in Switzerland, which is in Europe, we not only use Skype, but we use Google Plus as a point for doing that. But now we have Zoom. Zoom doesn't take as much bandwidth. You know, I sponsor men in South Africa, Rwanda, Nigeria, and some of the places in Africa don't have the bandwidth that's necessary to do some of the electronic things we do. So we have ways and means to do that. You know, that was a time when I would pay for, and that was my contribution. And what I would do, I knew they didn't have the funds. So I would purchase electronic literature. I would purchase literature to make sure that they had the necessary literature so that we can actually do step work. One of the men that I sponsors on this platform is gonna speak. And fortunately for us, you know, we met in person and he lives on another continent. God is taking the time for that. And I'm committed, I'm engaged. And I mentioned the spiritual principle of discipline. And what I have to offer this man is my experience. This is an experience-based program. So I don't have to be a genius. I don't have to have a certain intellect. My experience, strength, and hope is what I have to offer. And it's about the steps. And we have some serious expectations. And it's like a contract. And he let me know what he expected. And I let him know what I expected. So we knew what to expect from each other. For me, that's working. And it was easier for me to be open to that idea, Travis, you know, who encouraged me to begin my intercontinental sponsorship. But I already had the experience of having a long distance sponsor. So the idea of sponsoring someone on another continent was easier for me to absorb because I knew it worked for me. Thank you for allowing me to participate. As we all know, sponsorship for my literature, sponsorship is the heartbeat of Narcotics Anonymous. It's important for me to realize that what I knew about living almost killed me, basic text of Narcotics Anonymous. It's important for me to understand that Ron cannot be objective about himself. I can't see my own ears. I need someone to be able to be in that position. And by the way, I haven't gotten a text message or an email from my high pile lately. So I need a conduit for someone to speak through my higher power to me and be a part of that translation that we have of being able to have a mating of the mind and a mating of the spirit. And I think that works through sponsorship. Thanks for allowing me to participate.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you so much. I can't believe God hasn't texted you lately. That was fabulous. Thank you. So now we're going to hear from the wonderful Veronica about sponsorship, the sponsorship relationship between her home region of Sweden and the Polish region. Without further ado, the wonderful Veronica.
Thank you, Tim. Good evening, everybody. It's 9 p.m. here in Sweden. I just feel blessed. I just need to say thank you for asking me to participate in this and to sit here and listening to these amazing shares about sponsorship that touched my heart. And even the recording, I felt like she was here in my room with me. So I was asked to share about sponsorship between regions. And I'm really grateful I got that question, because that got me, you know, I've been, since I was asked, I've been, oh, what happened really? You know, how did this start? And when did it start? And so I'm going to say, maybe I'm going to name cities and years and, you know, and I can be wrong. I can remember wrong with the years and stuff, because one of the gifts with NA is that if you hang around long enough, you'll be old enough to get gray hair and a bad memory. So, yeah. When I started to do regional service as an alternate delegate, it was at the end of 2006. And when I back then we had already had members from Denmark visiting, because they were starting up again after the region had been resting, whatever you use, what term you use. And they had been visiting our regional meetings to listening in and get experience. And we shared this when we came to the EDMs, and I think it was in our reports. And we also talked to others, you know, at breaks and stuff. And I think it was in Wales. This is where I think I was right. Wales, I think it was 2007. And I was speaking to the Polish delegate, and she asked the question like, so can a region sponsor another region? And we were like thinking about it, and then we're like, yeah, why couldn't we? You know, why can't a region sponsor another region? And thinking about how our community grown in Sweden, it's been members or areas that had more experience hosting workshops for new emerging areas. And so why couldn't we? And
I can try to switch the 1,000 seats from Nick to my...
They took that back to their region. And I don't remember when it was, but we got the official ask, the question if our region would like to sponsor their region. And we took it up, but we had that as an item on the agenda for the regional meeting. And we talked about it and we discussed. And I think what came out of it was that it will not be a regional thing, but it will actually be our region would be the formal sponsor of the Polish region, but the service would be carried out by a close by area. So an area that was close and it felt natural was that the Western area was going to do this. And so back and forth, we invited them to the Western area to our area meeting for those days, and had workshops that maybe they could lead. And we were going to their service conference by request. We went there and we did workshops on whatever topics they needed. And what I felt is like it's very easy to feel. I heard speakers talk about it when it comes to the personal recovery, and that it's the sponsor is not better than the sponsee. And that's how I felt about this. We had experience that we could share, but what I personally took back most of it was the gifts of remembering where my own region comes from, and that is that when I got clean, we did not have the basic text in my language. And we had four areas instead of the 12 we had when we became the sponsor of Poland. And there was so many things we didn't know. And they reminded me of that with the questions that they had, because I can recognize the feeling of being new, and I want to know, and I want to have the right answers, and maybe not learn by experience. So that's something that I really took from it. And also something that I want to share is that me and Jimmy was there and did workshops at their service conference, one of all the times. And the first evening, I believe it was, we were at this, was it an old monastery or a hotel or something? We're in the basement, it was cold. And they were like, okay, now the whole workshop, whatever is done or business, and now we're going to do something. It's going to be a play. We're going to do a play. And as me and Jim were sitting there, and they was translating to us the whole time, and suddenly appears a guy with this like cardboard thing, you know, on the back and on the front, and it says basic text. And they say, he's basic text. And I was like, okay. And so he walks around amongst, you know, a group of members, and they all touch him. And they were like, they're all working on the translation. And then, so he did that a couple of times. And then he goes to the big forum, and he's like, okay, so now they're going to proofread. And this play never seemed to end. It was like going around. It was touching. It was going to a professional translator. It was going to the translations committee. It was going out in the fellowship. And it was just going around and around. And suddenly it went all the way back in the room. And they said, he's going to China. And so he went, basic text went to China and got printed. And while he was in the back of the room, he picked up a big box with hundreds of bows on it. It was so many bows. And came back into the room and he said, basic text, oh, I get so emotional. Basic text has come to Poland. And we all helped, the whole room helped removing the bows from the box and opening the box, and this took forever. And once it was done, they opened the box, and inside was a new box, and the whole procedure started again. And then finally, you know, there was the basic text in Polish, and people were throwing off confetti, and people were sharing, and everybody wanted to get a, you know, holding the book in their hand, and it was like a huge party. And I was just amazed on how much these members could feel joy and party and celebrate. And I was like, when did we stop celebrating these miracles? I mean, there's been plenty of books in Sweden since we got the basic text in Swedish, and I never seen us celebrate like that. It was like pure joy and just happiness, and it still gives me chills, and it still makes me in awe over things like we write our literature ourselves, things we do together. This literature saves lives, and it saved mine. And we, yeah, I see. We, to have it in our own language is so amazingly important, to have our literature in our own emotional language. And I am so grateful for every piece that we have in Swedish and the piece that is in Polish, because I know Poland went and sponsored the Czechs, and I think they are in their turn sponsoring others. And it's such a beautiful thing to share our experience on the sides of, you know, doing it on the EDM basis. So, you know, thank you. Thank you all for being here. Thank you all for celebrating Sponsorship Day and for letting me be a part of it and for just feel at home. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Veronica. That was so inspirational and fully emotional. That was wonderful. Thank you. Next, we have Zeynep to share with us. And Zeynep serves with the European Zonal Forum and lives and recovers in the NA community in Turkey. So a big welcome.
Hi, everyone. Okay, this is Zeynep. I'm an addict from Turkey. I live in Istanbul. And as always, I am so nervous right now. And my sponsor is here, hi, Bitu. And she just wrote me from WhatsApp, you know, just, I'm here. And I said, okay, see, my head is just gone blank. And she said, that's a good thing, you know, so don't share with your head and share with your heart. I was like, okay, well, how am I going to share when I'm about to have a heart attack? So I've been thinking the whole month about what to share here. You know, do I speak of being a sponsor? Do I speak of being a sponsee? About, you know, sponsee families, you know, everything. And I tried to take some notes. I tried to read the pamphlet, you know, but, you know, I think I'll just try and share from my heart. I'd like to share about being a sponsor for a little bit. In my home group, I had my first sponsee when I had under a year clean, and I was the only woman with the tattoos and everything. So when a newcomer came in still using, when they, you know, they tended to, you know, ask me to be their sponsor, but I said yes, but I think the problem was I tried to I relied on my own addiction and my own recovery, but I was still new in the program. I was just in my fourth step, and I tried to give from myself. But as time went on, you know, I figured out that I need to give what I got from the program. You know, I need to okay, my hope, my strength, my experience, okay, but I need to tap into the program and to the steps to support another woman. And I've had a lot of sponsees since then, you know, some relapsed and never came back. One of them never stopped using, and we lost her last year February of 2020. She overdosed and we lost her. Some relapsed and then, you know, came back. Some were already clean and, you know, kept on being clean. So it was, I'm really, you know, it's a learning process for the sponsor too, I think. When I was writing my 12 step, I thought that, you know, because there you need to ask yourself, what kind of a sponsor do I want to be? And or what kind of a sponsor am I? And I thought that sometimes when I'm too, you know, when I think that I know exactly what these girls are saying to me, when I identify too much with them, I tend to forget that they're other people, you know. I tend to mix those boundaries. I tend to think that, you know, they're me, I am them. But I realize that these are separate people. We might be similar, but these are, you know, I cannot assume that I can read their minds. So that was a big revelation for me. And I try to, you know, try to remember this. I forget this all the time, but then, you know, I try to remind me this myself. And anytime I'm asked to share about sponsorship, I just, you know, try to say this out loud. Of course, I think we all want to, you know, find our tribe, you know, be part of a sponsorship family, you know, just to belong. And we have all these unwritten rules and everything. And I've broken them all, probably. I've dated guys that were exes of my sponsee sisters. My sponsee sisters dated my exes. I dated my sponsee's ex. You know, these are these were all the taboos that I thought I would never break. But of course I do break them, because of course I'm an addict and a flawed person, and just I'm trying my best, you know. So being a sponsor is difficult, also refreshing, you know. When you're, you know, of course we all get depressed, and we sometimes tend to, you know, not want to go to meetings or something, but when a sponsee calls you, you know, you pick up the phone, you know. Maybe not for anyone else, but for the sponsee you do, you know, at least to tell them, look, I am feeling really bad right now, you know, I can't talk. But, you know, that conversation never ends there, you know, you say you can't talk, but then you do. I'm really grateful of being able to sponsor all these brilliant women. And just recently I have a LGBT male sponsee. And I'm really grateful that, you know, people trust me enough to, you know, want to, you know, walk this way with me. And also, of course, I'm also a sponsee. And I had chosen sponsors for all kinds of reasons. Before, when I was a newcomer, I was on DRT, and my first sponsor, I chose her because she said, oh, I'm scared of other women. And I thought no one else was like that except for me. And when she said that, I was like, wow, you know, some other human being feels the same. So that relationship didn't work out. And then my next sponsor, which we stayed together for 5 years. And she was okay with letting people do the step work while still on the first step, still on DRT. So that was the reason I chose her. And with her, you know, I relapsed again and again and again, but she never left me, you know. And in the end, I stayed clean, total abstinence, and she was my sponsor for 5 years. And I did one round of 12 steps with her. And then we started doing the traditions from guiding principles. And after that, I got, my life went into a crisis. The pandemic hit, and I was married at that point. I'd been married for over 4 years with another NA member. And my marriage was just crumbling, and we lost touch with my sponsor and me. We couldn't communicate anymore. So I changed my sponsor, and my new sponsor, which is Bitul, and me going through this weird divorce, and my new sponsor, who didn't really know me, you know, us two trying to work the program through, you know, writing the traditions, from guiding principles. that was a unique experience for me, and maybe for her too, you know, trying to figure out my part and daily-to-day basis while working the traditions, you know, that part that says in all our affairs. It was really enlightening for me, trying to get that perspective of applying the traditions to my life when it was sort of crumbling. Tim, how much time do I have?
You have a couple more minutes. One more minute, actually. There you go. I think you've timed it.
So, yeah, okay. Last thing, you know, I don't know. I'm so, so proud of being a part of this. And thank you so much for asking me to do this. I'm really new at world level service. And thank you for asking me. And thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much, Sana. That was wonderful. So in a display of patience, persistence, and prayer, and to show that long-distance relationships can work, we're going to try to go back to Ubu from Rwanda. Are you there, my friend?
Hello, hello. Can you hear me now?
Ah, we can. It's a miracle. Take it away, my man.
Thank you. My name is Ayubu. I'm an addict. I am in Rwanda, in the heart of Africa. I came to the program very accidentally. I went to help a fellow active addict. This is about 16 years ago, to meet someone who he was hoping was going to give him money to help us buy drugs. And by pure accident, the gentleman was a recovering addict. And he gave my friend the Green and Gold book. My friend needed translation because he was Francophone and this other gentleman was Anglophone. So in my effort to go to translate for my friend, I ended up picking up the Green and Gold book, NA book, and I went and read it all. Still dazed and high on drugs, and picked out two important things: that addiction is a disease, and it was possible to recover one day at a time. I continued using for about, I think, maybe another 3 or 4 years. And when I was completely broken and finished and on my knees, I ended up in a rehab, and I was thrown in a room. And this is when I remembered the two things I had read out of the book, that it was a disease I was suffering from, and that if I said a prayer, I could probably get some help a day at a time. So a day at a time, I spent 20 days in the rehab, praying every day not to jump the fences and escape and go and find more drugs. And then I love movies. I love cinema and movies. The gentleman that I had gone to meet with my friend was actually in Rwanda to make a movie. And when we met, in addition to the Green and Gold book, he also gave me some magazines about filmmaking. So I read them and kept a mental note that he is a movie maker. And then when I was about 3 weeks clean out of the rehab, miraculously, I got a call from him that he was in the region to make a film, and he invited me to go and work on a film for the very first time in my life. This film, you might know, is called The Last King of Scotland. I went to my first meeting with that gentleman in a foreign country, in a neighboring country, which is Uganda, actually. And in the meeting, of course, I didn't believe when he and others were saying that they had been clean for 3, 4, 5 years, because I thought it was impossible. But anyway, they mentioned the meeting, and they mentioned the fact that we should keep coming back. I kept going back, not really knowing why, but just curious about these people being able to stay clean for the number of years they were saying they were clean. Then fast forward, Rwanda has hardly any NA program. And somehow, sporadically, I kept attending and, you know, falling accidentally onto aims. And one time I tried to talk to a gentleman who I thought could be a sponsor. He was in Rwanda, and he took about 7 of us through the steps, each of us. So you can understand how supersonic fast it was. It was really, really very, very fast. Anyway, about 10 years later, I happened to be invited to Mombasa, where there was an African zonal forum. And this is the first time I would ever be in a gathering of recovering addicts. You know, a sizable number of recovering addicts who I could identify with, who I could be inspired by, but I was still timid and shy. I am naturally timid and shy, but I participated and I hugely, hugely identified. And everyone was talking about the fact that you should have a sponsor. Oh, you need a sponsor. You really, really should have a sponsor. I did not understand what it was all about, only that I was made to understand that everyone who was in the meeting had a sponsor. And a sponsor was paramount to me continuing to work the program and the steps. The following year, there was another gathering of the same group in a different country. The first one was in Mombasa, and the next one was in Dar es Salaam. And it was during this meeting that I gathered the courage, after looking around amongst the participants and identifying and hoping that the one I was looking at was the most approachable, was the one I hoped would listen to me. I hesitated a lot. I said a prayer and just gathered the courage and went clumsily and bluntly to the gentleman and said, "Can you please be my sponsor?" And then he said, "I will think about it. We will talk about it." And then we all left the gathering and I was terrified. I thought, oh my God, this is one of those other clumsy blunders of mine. Probably the gentleman was irritated by my clumsy approach and he left. A few days, I think, or weeks later, we got in touch and he sent me expectations, things he expected me to fulfill. And he asked me what I expected of him as a sponsor. All this was purely new and intimidating to me, actually. But what comforted me was at least that there was the part of him that considered my expectations of him as well. Anyway, one of the expectations he had for me was that I should have a running meeting in Rwanda and it should be functional, which was actually a tough one and which one I'm really grateful for, because it gave me the courage to try and get the program working in Rwanda and put in, you know, maximum effort, because without that, I was not going to have a sponsor. Anyway, I tried as much as possible and I got some sort of meeting running, and in the process, I got to start working the steps with my sponsor. All this was going to be long distance, because after I met him in Dar es Salaam, he went to America. I stayed in Africa, in Rwanda. So first it was emails, and then when the time for, you know, discussing and working the steps came, we had to start first by, you know, Skype, and then that wasn't working properly. And then I think we went to WhatsApp, that wasn't working properly. And then we went to Zoom, it worked a little better. You know, we kept trying all these tech things, and somehow we got a system working of working the steps. The main challenge for me was the time difference, and, you know, the fact that it was too early for my sponsor. And then I had to wake him up very early in the morning and so on and so forth. Anyway, it was challenging, but somehow through his endless patience, we managed to set a routine and we would meet once a week. We actually even fixed a day, and that still happened most of the time until the pandemic set in. And I'm really, really honored to have such an understanding and patient sponsor with whom we have shared a lot of wonderful moments and really, really painful moments. I found myself speaking at the World Convention in Orlando, Florida. By the way, my sponsor is Ron. I think you, I don't know if it's supposed to be anonymous, but it's Ron who just spoke a few minutes ago. I happened to be one of the speakers at the World Convention, which was, you know, an amazing, amazing experience. And I got to also be with him when his dear wife was, you know, really, really sick, and until she eventually passed on. Very, very difficult moments for him and me. And then after that, my eldest son passed away as well, very, very tragically. And, you know, through all these difficult moments, I had my sponsor to rely on and to seek guidance from and to share the pain with, and all the fantastic, lovely moments, as well as the very, very, very painful moments. So I'm eternally grateful to the program. I am very, very grateful to my sponsor, and I'm very grateful to you people to let me share my experience here. And I'm here to say that long distance sponsorship is working for me, has worked for me, and I hope it can work for many others who cannot be able to meet physically. That's all the time I have. Many, many thanks for making me share. And I apologize for the failure of the technology a little earlier.
Thank you so much, my friend. I'm not going to speak for anyone else, but I'm very grateful to you for sharing. So thank you so much. Wow. Okay, so without further ado, we will go and ask Kyle from Southern California to share a bit of his experience with us. Kyle recently lost his sponsor, so he's going to share with us about this aspect of the journey of sponsorship. So over to you, Kyle. Thank you.
Hi, I'm an addict. My name is Kyle. And grateful to be here and asked to share my experience, although obviously I wish it were under more celebratory circumstances, of course. So my clean date is April 20th of 1998. And as you can imagine, I got clean fairly young. I was 20 years old, like one of the earlier speakers. And my first sponsor always would tell me to say that whenever I was asked to share or to speak, just as a reminder to anyone, you know, who's new and who's listening, that you can get clean young and you can stay clean and live a very good life here. As far as sponsorship, I've had four sponsors over the course of my recovery. And the man with whom I was working last, and who I had worked with for the majority of my recovery, probably 12 to 15 years, died very unexpectedly a few months ago. And this is someone whom I had been expecting to continue to be working with for decades. You know, he was not a lot older than I was. He was, you know, took very good care of himself, and really not something that I saw coming, or at least not something that I saw coming for a very long time. And it, you know, I'm very, very saddened by that loss. But if you take nothing else away from my share, my foundation is still solid. And I know that I will be okay. I know that I will continue on forward, you know, from that death. And I'm very grateful that it was emphasized over and over again throughout my recovery that the foundation has to come first. And, you know, I was told beginning with my first sponsorship family, that it's not a question of if tragedy will upend my life and my recovery at some point, it is a question of when. And that is part of the blessing and the curse of living life on life's terms, is that if I stay clean long enough, you know, something, probably many things in my life will be disrupted by tragedy and by loss. And so I was always taught that if I build a solid foundation when times are good, that when things get really difficult, or, you know, I suffer an unexpected loss like this, I will know what to do. I will go to a meeting. I will reach out to my fellows. I will, you know, share how I'm feeling, because that's what I've been doing the whole time. And that, you know, in those times of unexpected disruption, and in those times of unexpected loss, I'm not going to suddenly become more willing. I'm going to default back to whatever I've been doing, you know, the whole time. And then, you know, I'm just in a very odd place at the moment, a very strange place in my recovery, where I'm, you know, trying to find another sponsor, knowing that I cannot replace the unique, you know, person that that I had been working with, and knowing that it's not, the idea isn't to find someone who is exactly like my sponsor, Steve, but to find someone who is a good fit for where I'm at today. I am grateful that I live in Southern California. There are, you know, certainly many, many men with a lot of clean time and a lot of recovery here. And I'm humbled a bit by the, you know, every time I hear someone share on a topic like this from a region of the country or a region of the world where there is a lot fewer NA members or fewer NA members with time, you know, it humbles me with other people's perseverance. And so, I think maybe what I want to share about here in the few minutes that I have is just how much what I've been looking for in a sponsor has changed over the years. When I got, because that's certainly something I've been thinking about a lot. When I got clean in my early recovery, probably my first, you know, 5 or 6 years, what I needed from a sponsor was identification, first and foremost. I was 20 when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, and I needed someone who would help me realize that I belonged here. I didn't explicitly understand that at the time, but in retrospect, it was definitely what I was looking for. And I needed a lot of answers because I did not know how to live life. I didn't know how to live life on life's terms. I didn't know how to live life on any terms, really. You can imagine how much of a mess things were for me to go crawling into a Narcotics Anonymous meeting at that age. So I needed a lot of answers. I needed to know how to be employable. I needed to know how to repair the relationships with my family. I needed to know how to tell people how I felt. I needed to know how to be honest. I needed to know how to be of service. I needed to know many, many things. And so I looked for a sponsor who could give me those answers. I looked for a sponsor who could teach me those very basic life skills and those very basic recovery skills, because I didn't know anything when I got here. Now, with a few decades clean, I'm in a very different place. I'm certainly not perfect. There is certainly room to grow for me in every area of my life, but I've managed to check a lot of those boxes over the years. And so I think now I'm not so much looking for answers from a sponsor, I'm looking for questions. A few people have mentioned that in their shares, that I can't see everything in my life. I can't get the kind of perspective that I need. And so what I'm looking for is someone who will ask me the right questions that will prompt me to go on that journey of self-discovery that is inherent to the 12 steps, or at least in my experience of working the 12 steps. Someone who will ask me, you know, what do you really feel? Someone who will ask me, what would your life be like if you changed this or let this go? You know, someone who will ask me the questions that I just don't have the patience or the perspective to ask myself on a regular enough basis. And at this point in my recovery, I'm looking for someone to be emotionally accountable to. At 23 years clean, I know not to take things that don't belong to me, right? Like the basic things the basic ways that I would act out very early in recovery are not things that have troubled my life in a long time. But I still am very much a person who processes things in my head. And what I need now, what I've always needed from a sponsor, is someone who will help me get in touch with what's going on inside, emotionally. And it's a very, you know, it's a very strange and awkward process. At least it has been for me. You know, sort of, I guess, quote unquote, interviewing, you know, men with time. When I first asked Steve to sponsor me, he and I had known each other for a number of years. We had developed a friendship organically, and he was someone that was sort of half my sponsor already at that point. And so when I realized that, you know, that I needed to change sponsors, it was very easy to just get on the phone and just be like, hey, dude, do you want to make this official? Because I need a guy. And, you know, and now it's like I'm having to reach out to these different people that I know in meetings, that I know through friends, and sort of sit down and have that conversation that people have shared about what do you expect from a sponsee. This is, you know, what I'm sort of looking for. And I was joking with someone that it's like the worst parts of a job interview and a Tinder date at the same time. But I have trust that this will work out, that it's just a matter of me being patient. Thank you, I see the card. It's a matter of me being patient and being willing to live in the discomfort of this process. So much of recovery and so much of my recovery, especially as I've gotten more clean time, has been about just sitting in discomfort and letting these sort of sometimes difficult decisions and these difficult processes just play out in their own time. I see so much of life as a problem to be solved immediately, but that's not how recovery works. Recovery is an emotional process. It's a spiritual process. And just because I'm uncomfortable or just because I don't have an answer right now, that doesn't mean that I'm doing anything wrong. That sometimes I need to be in a place of confusion and be in a place of uncertainty long enough for sort of the right person or the right answer to appear. And then the part that I'm responsible for is just being open-minded enough to kind of see that answer, to see that solution, even if it's not, you know, coming from the direction that I expect it is. So I think that's about my 10 minutes, and I am grateful for the opportunity again to share. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all of the other speakers and participants as well.
Thank you, Carl. Wonderful stuff. So now we've invited Teresa from Brazil to share a little of her experience with us. Teresa has served the fellowship in Brazil for many years and recently started a new sponsorship relationship after many years with her former sponsor. And it's a real pleasure to welcome you today, Teresa. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Teresa. I'm an addict. My clean date is August 21st, 1989. It's a pleasure to be here with you. And I'm also very nervous. I'm wondering why on earth I was invited to be part of this panel. But anyhow, here I am. I have an expanded and unorthodox view on sponsorship today, after being a very, you know, limited and orthodox person for quite a long time. And I first of all want to congratulate all of you for sponsorship occasion, since sponsorship day has passed, because it's not sponsors day, as I was telling my sponsees, it's sponsorship day. So this includes the sponsors and the sponsees, which are a very important part of the equation. Without the sponsees, this sponsorship relationship and they wouldn't be possible. And also my view on sponsorship also includes other forms of sponsorship, such as, you know, reaching out to newcomers at meetings. And also I was looking at the speaker list for this event, and most of the people that are on this list and most of the communities that are listed on this event weren't here when I got here to this fellowship. And the reason all of us are here, or most of us are here, and most of our languages are being translated, is because of the outreach efforts of our NA World Services. So these sponsorship efforts are very important. So I just wanted to remind all of us that it's our responsibility to try and make a recurring contribution to NA World Services and try to support that effort worldwide, because this is very important to save all of those lives and try to, you know, sponsor all those lives and all those communities and, you know, keep that effort going. And I'm very grateful because the message improved and expanded so much here in Brazil due to that sponsorship or implicit sponsorship effort. And I've had a very loving sponsor for 22 years. She was, you know, my best friend. She was a very enlightened person, and we did a lot of step work, but we had a lot of fun. She was a servant, and she was a person who taught me to be consistent with my thoughts and words and actions. Maybe that was the legacy she left. Not that this is easier to do, to say it, than to practice. And she was also struggling with that too, because she was an addict and she was an honest person. And she didn't pretend to be a saint. But unfortunately, after 22 years, she passed in 2014, I think, or 2015. And she had throat cancer, and our sponsorship family and her daughter, we were united in that moment. And we were friends and we helped each other. Two of her former sponsees became my sponsees, and one of the other sponsees asked one of the other sponsees to become his sponsor. So we really did help each other. So that was a legacy of love that she passed to us. And for 3 years, I didn't choose a sponsor because I wasn't able to find anybody to replace her. until I met my sponsor's sponsor. I won't mention any names, but I met Becky here in Rio de Janeiro at a World Convention, and she was sharing about her difficulty of finding herself a new sponsor after her sponsor, Sydney, passed. And she got herself a sponsor, and she was sharing that experience with me. So I opened my mind to finding someone to help me. So I started to work the steps with a guy, and that any member, he had less clean time than I had. And we started to work the steps together. And it was very, very good, very good experience. And after some time, I started calling him a sponsor. And life was really good. And it was a very nice occasion. You know, that those moments in time when nothing needs to be changed. And my son was 35 years old. He had that really nice fiancé they were going to marry. And you always wish something more. And that innocent something else you wish. And I wanted to have a grandson. That was my little, you know, happy obsession. And we were very happy about his wedding that was happening in 2 weeks. And then he stopped at the traffic light, and a homeless guy just out of the blue came and just stabbed my son to death. And that was a really terrible tragedy. And if I could go back in time, that was the life I wanted back, and nothing I would change, not even the grandson. And that is something that will never come back. And it's needless to say that I got really crazy with that situation. And we have those religious services when people pass in Brazil. That's, although I'm not religious, this is a tradition. So after seven days when the person passes, we have those services. And that was the last time I saw that sponsor of mine. He hugged me, and he just disappeared. Maybe it was a way of saying that it was his limit. On the other hand, my sponsees cooked for me. They took me to meetings. They lay in bed with me and hugged me. They invited me for service commitments. They called me. They took me out for coffee. And they kept me. They kept in touch with me. So that's what I was talking about, the expanded vision of sponsorship I have today. And well, I was obsessed with trying to change what was unchangeable for a year. I was very depressed, and I was trying in my mind to change what had happened, and trying to save my son from that tragic happening, until my wife came to me and she said, and she's an NA member who has a lot less time than I have. And she's nothing close to a sponsor, but she sat down with me and with the step guide, and she said, "Don't you believe in this? And thank you for the 1 minute sign." And she said, "So let's read this. And this is the path you believe in." So she started reading the guide with me. And then I finally realized that I was powerless over my loss. And I had to work my sanity and to work my grief. And the insanity was to try to change something that was unchangeable. And I had to turn my revenge over to the care of the program and so forth. And we did the whole book in 2 weeks. And after we got to the 12th step, I decided to open a meeting, a step working meeting. So my friends and my sponsees and I started this meeting that you read out of the step working guide, and you, a Zoom meeting, of course, and you write some questions, some selected questions, and then you share and you go back to your sponsor, of course. And then I was lacking a sponsor because everybody have a sponsor to go to and take the questions. And I didn't have one. So I started this relation with a friend of mine, a very long time friend of mine. And I don't call her a sponsor. But she's been helping me. And she's been very helpful. And she's very loving and caring. And you know she's my sponsor. She doesn't know yet, but all of you know. And what I can tell you is that I don't have a God, a caring God. This is not my program. My 11th step is to be in touch with the program, with you guys. And what I can tell you is that when there's no God to find, and I don't have any, when there's no experience, strength, and hope, because life on life's terms sometimes doesn't bring you that, and when miracles fail, and when stars doesn't shine, when there's no magic, there's always that one addict, you know? There's always one to find. And there's a program, and there's this beautiful path. I know my soul is damaged beyond repair, and it probably will be, but there's always another day, and one day at a time. Days are beautiful. Today, days are beautiful, and I try to find beauty in each day. And I have friends, and I have principles. And now we will probably be having a principal a day. And I hope we do have. And that's it. Thank you very much for letting me share and for having a day to live.
Thank you, Teresa. It is a beautiful day, and your share made it more beautiful. So thank you so much. Okay, our next panelist is Bruno from Southern California. Bruno sponsors a number of men in his community, and they regularly catch up in his garage to talk about motorcycles and recovery. So we are changing tact and looking forward to it. Over to you, Bruno. Thank you.
Wow. My name is Bruno. I'm an addict. And yeah, we do. I am in sponsorship. I am very adamant on community. You know, it's not an I thing, it's a we thing, you know, and I really encourage that the men I sponsor to, you know, to communicate and hang out with their sponsee brothers, you know, and you know, and by doing so, I found that the message stays pretty consistent. You know, I found Narcotics Anonymous through H and I was incarcerated I found it back in December of 1985. And I got out, you know, and I emulated the people that I was around, which consisted of riding motorcycles, going to meetings, and redheaded newcomers, you know. And what happened was I lasted about 7 years, and the fateful happened because in the process of all that, I didn't learn about the program. You know, I didn't get that information. You know, it wasn't the people that I was around, that just wasn't part of it. You know, I had a service commitment, and when I'd violate my parole, somebody would cover it, and, you know, no one ever talked to me about it. When I came back in 2000, my clean date, St. Patrick's Day of 2000, when I came back in 2000, I went into long-term treatment, and I got really lucky, and I ran across Bobby Raymar, and he explained the program to me step by step, you know, and my biggest regret was, how come I didn't have that information before, you know? And now my goal is to make sure that anybody I sponsor around has that information, you know, because I didn't know the whole tie between service, steps, meetings, you know, and how it all came together. And you know, I do now, you know, and we do a lot of things together. I sponsor people through love and understanding, and I build relationships with them. It's not just like, hey, let's do some step work and get on your way. You know, I commit to a person, you know, from the inside out, and that's just the way I work. And I do sponsor people, you know, it's gotten easier with Zoom and everything else. I'm sponsoring people across the country too, you know, but one of the things that we were doing once in a while, we'd show up at my garage at 11 o'clock at night, you know, everybody would ride their motorcycles. The neighbors were really happy about it, you know, and you know, we'd wrench on the motorcycles and talk about our feelings and talk about recovery and step work and, you know, what we're doing. And it's a real bonding thing, you know, and because we all try to find something in common with each other. It's not just motorcycles, but there's a lot to do with that, you know, and having fun with them, you know, with the people that, you know, I sponsor, you know, and showing that we can do stuff like go to the lake, go boating, you know, and it's not just about sitting in a room, you know, sharing what has happened. And I've outlived two sponsors, you know, when Bobby passed, I was an NA orphan for a few minutes, you know, but the cool thing about sponsorship is I had a responsibility to the guys I sponsored. You know, and I needed to have direction, because what happened, there's times when people ask me questions that I don't have an answer for, you know, and if I don't have a sponsor, where am I going to get that answer? You know, like, I can't disrespect somebody by making something up, you know. So I asked a gentleman, Mike Murphy, to sponsor me, and when I asked Mike to sponsor me, he said, hey, look, I've got stage 4 cancer. I don't know how long I'm going to be around. And I said, I'll take whatever you got, you know, and, you know, that was a 5-year relationship there. And, you know, it was beautiful. You know, I would trade it for the world. And, you know, and right now, you know, I'm sponsored by, you know, by Steve, you know, that all my previous sponsors wrapped up into one, you know, and I couldn't, you know, I think I got the best sponsor there is, you know, so, but, you know, in our family, in the community that we have around, we frequently get together, you know, we frequently find out what somebody needs. We rally around each other and, you know, and we make sure that somebody's got an understanding of what the application of the steps means, you know, and we make sure that someone knows what the spiritual principles are, you know, where they can be used, you know, and how they can be used, you know, and we do that on a consistent basis. I recently retired from the studios, so I'm home more now, you know, and I went to work in treatment, and I'm very adamant that, you know, what I do outside of work is what my recovery is, and I try to explain that to everybody else too. You know, I'm on my fifth go around of steps. You know, I'm writing a 4-step right now, and it's cool because one thing that I have learned to do is be about as transparent as I can be, you know, and transparency has done a lot of things for me, man. It's, it stopped me from doing things that I know I couldn't explain. But it's also helped me find some courage to do stuff that I knew I could do, but I was just afraid of doing. And I watched it. I watched the trickle down effect, because every time I've done a step work with a sponsee, that means I've done step work again too. I hear something new, I learn something new, I've learned how to look at it from a different angle, and it rejuvenates me, man. Sometimes I've come off a couple step threes where I was more fired up than my sponsee that was reading it to me. I'm like, yeah, he understands this, man. It's cool, and wanted to high five him, and that's just the beauty of this program and love, man. And getting here and doing this stuff, man. I'm not mad that I wasted 7 years, because if I wouldn't have done all that stuff, then I wouldn't be who I am today. It's not so much what I did wrong back then, it's what I could do right now, and it's got nothing but love, all the people that I have around me now, we've just got this consistent check-in. We all check in with each other. We're all in the program, and it's not that I'm in NA. It's like NA is in me, and that's how I've got my life now, and I like it. When I do stuff now, there's an automatic response, like, okay, is this going to be good for me? Is this going to be good for somebody else? Should I do this? And before I didn't have any of those decisions. It was like, let's do this. It's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission, right? now it's a completely different story, And I hope I'm talking slow enough for the translators, because, I like everybody else, got of this thing, and I was all cool. And the minute I started talking, I got cotton mouth, and, I got all excited, and I want to start waving my hands in the air. I did something last night that I very, very rarely do, man. I was at a meeting, and the lady asked this guy to be the speaker at their Unity Day thing. And the guy said, no, I'm not into that. I won't do that. Not whatsoever. And I just stood there and went, whoa. So I tapped her on the shoulder and I said, hey, you know what, man, if you need coverage for that, I'll do it. I generally don't volunteer for that stuff, but I never turn down a request. Don't get me wrong, man. If someone asks me, so I do it. But I usually never step up like that. But I saw the look on the girl's face after, he shut her down. Wow. There's a couple of people behind me that I sponsor, And I can't say I did it because they were standing there, but I did do it because I don't want to represent that type of, that type of action. That's truly about it. Sponsorship's been the biggest blessing in my life, man. It's held me accountable at times when I didn't want to be accountable. My sponsees have saved my ass plenty of times, like everybody else, that's talked about it. You stay around here long enough, man, things are going to happen. I've outlived both my parents. I walked through it clean with my sponsees. My mother, when she had a stroke, man, there was a couple of times where I walked in the room, she didn't know who I was, and she kicked me out of the room. And I'm a grown-ass man calling one of my sponsees crying, going, my mom didn't even know who I am, And that's the support that we have in the community that I talk about, Hey, yeah, motorcycles are cool. I've been riding my whole life, but what's even cooler is being clean, and being able to appreciate it all. I think that used up my minute, man. Thank you guys for having me. I'm in awe that you guys even picked me.
Thank you, Bruno. That was excellent. Thank you so much. Now, for our final panelist today, I'm very fortunate to have in my life as a dear friend of mine, as a mentor and a fine example of a human being that I look to and how to live my life. Bella is from Australia. Bella was one of the first World Board members elected back in 1998 and also served as the point person for the sponsorship book. So I'm going to hand it over to you, my dear friend. Bella, thank you.
Thank you so much, Tim. It's just such an honour to be here, and I've just loved, absolutely loved this, this event. It's just wonderful. You know, listening to everybody's experience and wondering what the hell I'm doing here, and I'm going to turn myself off. I love being able to turn myself off. You know, I wish I could turn myself off easier in real life. So slow down, Bella. I'm one of those people who talks really fast. So look, I'm not going to talk about the sponsorship book, except it was just such an extraordinary experience to work on and to be trusted. But I just thought, what can I bring after listening to other people's experiences? And my experience with sponsorship was being in a fellowship that was emerging from the other fellowship, and how the change of the way that we sponsored each other meant that ENA community grew here in Melbourne, in Australia. I got clean in 86, and the AA was a really big fellowship, and the NA fellowship was really struggling. And if people wanted to do 90 meetings in 90 days, they had to do the two fellowships. And when people talked about sticking with the strength, they generally meant don't do NA meetings, go to the other fellowship, which just seemed absolutely wrong. And although I had to straddle that for a while, a couple of things showed me where I really needed to be. And one of the things was sponsorship. I really wanted to change. I really wanted to live. I was so sick of myself. I was sick of my stress. I was sick of my control issues. I was sick of the fact that I just didn't seem to be able to love. I was sick of me, and I wanted to change, and I wanted the steps. And when I walked in and saw the word powerless, I was one of those people that actually laughed out loud. And I thought, what if it's true that I really am powerless? And I recognized the freedom that would be in that, because I had to rule the world and I was tired of that. So I wanted to do the steps, and I had to pick this person who wasn't an addict. I mean, she was an addict, but she called herself an alcoholic. And so I did my first fifth step with somebody who never used illegal drugs, who hadn't worked in the sex industry as I had, who had never done one piece of crime, and who really hadn't grown up being very ashamed of herself. And her eyes really widened as I shared my story. And I felt that I was still a little bit uncomfortable freaking people out. At the same time, as I said, our little fellowship in NA was struggling, and Mario, who I was very grateful for in so many ways and served with him on the World Board, came down to our second area convention, and he said, you guys are not going to grow until you separate yourself from this larger fellowship. And that means you've got to stop being sponsored by those people. And which is a real challenge, because we were young, you know, and I wanted NA to grow. And so I stopped being sponsored by this very nice school teacher and started being sponsored by somebody who was younger than me, who didn't have a lot of clean time. And we co-sponsored each other. And as we all separated ourselves out from this larger, big old, you know, stable fellowship and into our little crazy, newly emerging community, things really changed. It was as if through sponsorship we could be absolutely who we were, and there were no big guys. You know, I absolutely love CMOOCs. discussion about having to find the perfect sponsor and the big gun, the big guy, the big kahuna. Well, there weren't any. We were all just pretty much within the same kind of clean time range. And I've got to say, it absolutely worked. There were no experts. There were no big kahunas. There was no heroes. We were just people wanting to stay alive and learning to love each other. And it absolutely worked. Absolutely worked. And I could see how sponsoring just made the magic happen in our fellowship. The other thing that happened was that I was thrown into sponsoring people when I was like 6 months clean. So it meant that I had to grasp really quickly that I couldn't be an expert, which was such a huge thing to let go for me. And before I got clean, I had to be an expert. Otherwise, I wouldn't say anything. I could only invest in doing things that I already knew I was good at, because my self-esteem was so low that I couldn't fail at anything until I got clean. So to be thrown into the situation where I couldn't be an expert and yet I had to help other people was just extraordinary. And to then absolutely understand that all I could bring was my love, that was a liberation for me. I didn't have to know everything. And in fact, the more I could admit that I didn't know anything much, the more things worked out, you know, because it really was around love. The other thing that happened for me is that I was a big talker, and I'm still a big talker, and I would fill the airways with talk so that people wouldn't actually see me. And here I was as a sponsor having to listen more than I could talk. I mean, what a liberation to realize that I could have relationships where all I needed to do was listen and love. I mean, this was, again, another liberation for me. I came into the fellowship not only with a problem with addiction, but a huge problem with relationships, because I didn't know who I was and I had such low self-esteem. And here I was being loved just for being me. We all experience this, I know. We all experience this. Then as things kind of got on a little bit more in our local fellowship, there were big kahunas and people wanted to make me one of those just because I'd stayed clean. And so people started to glamorize me, which I found very uncomfortable. And so I was always able to refer to this idea that all we needed to do was be ourselves and love and listen. But some people really insisted that I be important. And it's really hard when people want us to be important because they don't call us on our ship. You know, and then I went through a time of psychobabble where I was able to explain everything I did in relationship to my childhood, all the things that went on in my life. And that was kind of nice for a while, and I did get some explanations. But really a lot of the things that I did when I was using was just because I was drug fucked and didn't know any better and was just trying to make things up in a world that seemed very strange. And so, you know, it was this kind of interesting stuff with people trying to make me a big shot. I constantly had to remind myself in some ways, you know, that I was, as I said, just an ordinary person, and all that psychobabble, get rid of that. You know, the main thing I needed to learn to do as a person and as a sponsor was to do the right thing and treat people well and love and listen. How simple this is to live this world, in this world. How easy it is to be me now. I feel I'm always in the right place doing the right things. I don't need to be anybody else now. How could I be? That's where craziness lies, wanting to be somewhere else and being somebody else. And I absolutely know that this sponsorship journey has taken me to exactly this place. I have a situation now where I co-sponsor with another person, and that works well. But I also have a little steps group two women I've been working on the steps with for over 20 years now. And we just listen and love each other, and it works really well. And every so often, you know, I will ask them to call me on stuff because sometimes they forget. What a wonderful world. What a wonderful world I inhabit. And it is all because of love. And I'll just finish on this, and it's probably a crazy thing to throw in at the last minute, but some people know that my husband died about 6 weeks ago, so I really related to the people who live with loss. And yet I wouldn't be anybody else in any other place. I am completely satisfied with my life, and that's because of Narcotics Anonymous. Thanks for asking me to share again.
Thank you, Bella. What a wonderful way to finish, and a huge thank you to everyone today. This has been an incredible webinar. I'm so grateful to have been able to hear you all, Neverland, participate in it. So thank you so much. A big, huge thank you to our translators, this is not an easy job for them, especially with, I haven't got one, but some people on here had accents that were quite hard to understand. So thank you to our translators and to our wonderful staff who just make this all seem so seamless and effortless. And thanks to everyone for your service. And we will see you at the next webinar. If you could all just join me in a quick moment silence, and we'll go out with the third step prayer. A moment silence to think about those who aren't here yet. And the third step prayer, if you can unmute yourself, that'd be great. I'm not sure if you can or not. Many of us have said, take our will and our lives.
Guide us in our recovery. Show us how to live.